Welcome back in to the B-Ball Index podcast, where we talk about pretty much everything under the sun with basketball, from analytics to roles to talent grades, everything in between. Finally, we're all back this week. I hope you enjoyed 40 minutes of Tim not shutting the hell up last week. He claims that he did a great job. I have not listened to it yet, but I will take his word for it. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this lovely show, Tony East. And with me, of course, is Tim. Tim, is it nice to have people back with you today?
Oh, it's very nice. I'm very much looking forward to it. It's so much more difficult talking for that long than I would have anticipated. My voice got all raspy. I couldn't cough. I'm glad you guys are back.
No aspirations for the Kranzis show on Sirius XM radio or something like that?
Not by myself. If I had another person, I'm sure if you prompted me, I can talk forever. But having to introduce topics, try to give analysis, transition to new topics over and over is just so much. So I have even more respect for you, Tony, doing this with other podcasts you do.
Your broadcast impact plus minus is pretty poor. That terrible joke is a great segue into who else is here. Jacob Goldstein, Mr. PIPO himself. Jacob, welcome back.
Hi. It's great to be back.
What do you think your BIPM is? Is it pretty good?
Well, I built the stats, so it has to be.
We're not going to talk about any PIPM today, but the season is close. We are about a week away. We are here. There was already a game, but the Houston Rockets versus the Shanghai Sharks is not worth dropping everything for a fun podcast.
We're going to do deep analysis just on that game, so please turn that volume up.
Well, okay. I know we didn't plan on talking about this, but 66 three-point attempts. Yeah. Holy cow. That's insane. That's
ridiculous.
Insane. The Pacers' most in a consecutive games last year was 62. The
Rockets beat that one. In consecutive wow. games?
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Woo. Yeah, that's a fun fact.
I was looking that up because I was like, 66 is wild. Anyway, so today, and around preseason, this feels like a good topic because, you know, we see players who come out and are playing differently or playing in a new role on a new team or even on their own team. We're talking about player role development from year to year because Tim was bored at a conference. And because Tim was bored at a conference, I will let him talk for a minute and explain some of this stuff.
Thank you, Tony. So, yes, I had some time to think at a conference. And
I'm getting you fired today.
Yeah. Really wanted to tie together a lot of what we've introduced already. We've talked about the different grades and how they tend to grow and develop. We've talked about last week, I talked about individual players and roles they may be better fits in. We've introduced the roles themselves. And I wanted to take that final step and take a look at if we were to come up with, I'm going to call it an offensive role ladder. You know, you start at the bottom and then you climb your way up. Where are those bottom rungs? What are the intermediate steps? And then where is the top of the ladder? So I think the most simple part of that, if you look at the 11 roles that we have, is from a ball handler standpoint, secondary creators tend to feed up to primary creators, which tend to feed up to mega creators. It's a natural progression. It tends to go up in that direction. The percentages of the play types in terms of, you know, less spotting up, less kind of secondary creator stuff, heading into more of that primary creation, pick and roll, isolation. It's a natural progression. So that one was an easy one. I just kind of speculated that, and I tried to draw out the rest of this network, this tree, this ladder of roles. And then
it's very concise and easy to read. So if you want to check out the web, go on to Twitter because it is not at all complicated.
If you just have to refer back and forth to the different two letter initializations for the roles, but I think I built it out pretty well, Tony. I had all the roles in there.
Given that I can see the results, you did a pretty good job, yeah.
I think I did well.
What about my improvements to make it functional?
Well, you know. but it looks good. It does. I guess my initial speculation, my intuition, having watched a lot of basketball, looked at a lot of this stuff, ended up being pretty close to the end result, which I think is a good sign. And as we dug into it, the three of us over the last hour or so, we've realized that a lot of it is really intuitive. I didn't nail everything, but what I didn't nail, once we looked more into it, made plenty of sense. So I don't know where we want to get started, or, you know, what we're going to talk about next exactly. But
I mean,
I don't know. I love the way it looks.
I mean, you already talked about with the guards, roughly speaking, players who are creators in some degree go secondary to primary to mega or to tall, I suppose. But one of those two is the final sort of last step. So let's move on to someone that doesn't quite have as well-defined a improvement path. They're not quite as limited in the number of roles they tend to spread out to. Let's talk a little bit about the glue guys role, because they go to pretty much everyone in development.
And that's kind of the point of glue guys, right? They can do a little bit of everything, and then, you know, maybe it's more specialized. Maybe they finally get that one thing they're really good at. It makes sense that they could go to various places.
It's like the perfect, I don't know, you're super athletic, but you aren't a very good basketball player yet in college. You get into the NBA, you just kind of do a little bit of everything, and then you eventually, that clay is kind of chiseled away into whatever you're going to end up being. So we see some guys that are like that. We see some guys who just aren't good shooters. They're not good in the post. They're really good defenders, but they can't do a whole lot else, so they just end up in this hodgepodge position. And then you have guys who they're wings that also can do a little bit of the ball handler stuff. They do a little bit of the big man stuff. So there are a couple different ways to be a glue guy, which I think has somewhat of a role to play in how many different possible avenues for growth there are. But it's like you said, Jacob, certainly the most, I don't know if it's the most rudimentary, but it certainly has the most avenues for growth. We see glue guys turning into tall spot up wings, perhaps as they are more refined as a wing player, are shooting a little bit more, doing less big man stuff. We also see glue guys end up being versatile bigs, completely away from the ball handler type role, heading into, you know, more of the pick and roll roll man, posting up, putbacks and cuts and dump offs. But then we also see glue guys as one of only two, really, when you look at all 10 roles other than tall creators, only two of those 10 feed the tall creator position. And those are glue guys and primary creators. So that's an interesting thing to me, because I think if we're going to look at all 11 of these roles, we consider the mega creators and the tall creators, and then maybe the versatile bigs, the three top positions, or I'd say that most impactful or most perhaps most talented offensive players tend to be in those three roles. So knowing that glue guys are one of those two major ways to become a tall creator, which again is like the who would that be? That'd be like the LeBron Jameses, the Blake Griffins, Kevin Durant.
That's so an example of a guy who went from glue guy to tall creator last year was Tatum. That's a good one.
There you go. Yeah. So it's an interesting thing to take a look at, because one, it's one of those two major feeder pools for the tall creator. But at the same time, you can't just look at the glue guys and say they're going to be tall creators, because when you look at where they go to so many other different areas. Even some to pick and pop bigs, some to roll and cut bigs. They're pretty much a feeder pool for all the big man positions. Tall spot up wings and the tall creators. So
everything outside of like the hyper elite creators, the primary and the mega.
Yeah. Anything that's not like a pure guard in terms of secondary, primary, mega creator, or like a movement wing, they pretty much feed everything else. So that's interesting. So from a guard standpoint, like we said, it's a pretty clear bottom to top in terms of secondary to primary to mega. And those primary creators also feed into the tall creators. The glue guys feed a bunch of different places. When we look at the bigs, one of the big errors that I made in my initial assumption was the versatile bigs are the more developed, the more advanced of the three categories compared to the roll and cut bigs, who are kind of like your Rudy Gobert types, your Montrezl Harrell, your DeAndre Jordans. And then the other of the three is the pick and pop bigs. I figured that the roll and cut and pick and pop would feed into the versatile bigs, and that would be kind of, hey, once you get better, this is where you go. But in reality, it's more of a synergistic triangle where everybody goes everywhere, and it's not really
that. Tim, wait for one sec. You're having a connection issue, so it's probably best if you just, once it works, this, I don't even think he's noticed.
No, I can hear you.
All right, now you can hear?
Yeah.
Okay, I would just repeat that section.
From where?
From when you said it was more of a synergistic triangle. On the word triangle, it got like triangle. It was a little spacey. Okay,
so... So the guards have a pretty, not linear, but there's a clear progression with the glue guys. They can go a bunch of different places. And then with the bigs, I made the assumption before I looked at the data that the rollers and the poppers would feed the versatile bigs, when in reality, it's more of a triangle where everybody goes in every direction. It's not that the versatile bigs are better than the other two. It's just that they do different things. And from a growth standpoint, we see players moving in every which way. So that was interesting. And then the only position of the other eight that feeds into those three big men spots are the glue guys. So the glue guys are the only thing really tying everyone else to the bigs. And then the bigs just kind of feed each other in a big circle or triangle.
Yeah, one thing we've realized just through looking through these, and I'm sure – for those of you listening, you'll be able to find a lengthy tweet thread either from Tim's account or the site's account explaining these graphics and showing them off. But one thing we've learned through looking through them for about an hour or so is, you know, the players that are changing roles, it's really intuitive. You know, you're not going to see any spot up wings turning into mega creators, because those are just incredibly different roles that you have to be very specialized at to be good at. And you know, the amount of skill development required to take Danny Green and make him a LeBron James type player is just sometimes unreasonable to expect.
Mm-hmm. Friend of the pod Danny Green has to has to make a return. Yeah, spot up wings turn into primary creators and mega creators almost never. Mm-hmm. In fact, 0% of the time, mega creators, which makes sense, right? Like Danny Green obviously is our poster child because he was so well used last year. But think of any guy who's reduced to spot up Korver, even. Like, you'd never throw the ball to Korver and say, "Get me a bucket," ever. Like, that'd be the worst.
Or say, create a shot out of a pick and roll for a teammate. Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense to me. That's not an evolution that makes any sense for a guy that's been hammering shooting his whole career as his skill. Whether it be a movement wing or a spot up wing, it makes no sense to say, okay, that one skill you've worked on your whole career, scratch that and do something else. It just makes a lot of sense that the growths go the way that they do, intuitively and in actuality.
Yeah, and in a couple different ways. One, in terms of the positional spectrum, so guards to wings to bigs, you don't see the bigs jumping over to the guards or the guards jumping over to the bigs. It's those glue guys in the middle that kind of tie that together. And then from a scope standpoint, just like you were mentioning, you don't really go from like a secondary creator to a tall creator or a mega creator, or from a spot up wing to a tall creator or mega creator. There are intermediate steps. You can't really skip the rungs of the ladder. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. That can be useful for us to look at a specific player who might happen to be a spot up wing that people are excited about, and be realistic about what we should expect their usage to look like next season. We haven't seen any spot up wings become primary creators, I don't believe. So don't expect that to happen. If anything, they'll be a secondary creator first, or maybe a tall spot up wing. But they're not going to be a tall creator. They're not going to be a primary creator. They're not going to be a mega creator.
I'd like to note that Tim had to pause when he said that you don't see spot up wings become primary creators because this chart is hard to read.
I made
a little bit.
It's a little bit hard.
We'll tweet it out. Other people will take a poll on it.
Tim just drops me and Jacob two pictures of what looks like the same thing that say very different things, but they look identical.
To be fair, I did provide you the directions on how to read
them. You did. I understand. But I like your point about skipping rungs. I think that's important, especially when evaluating like younger players, because you know, secondary creators jumping to mega creators is A, unlikely, and B, just like an unreasonable expectation for a young player. Like Lonzo Ball is a secondary creator this past season. No team is going to be like, okay, come be a mega creator for us. Be the guy.
We need a James Harden. Come here, Lonzo Ball.
Exactly. Exactly. So like of the secondary creators who do change roles, 50% of them become primary creators. So just like they have more offensive responsibility, but not like all of the offensive responsibility. You know, it's like a sliding scale of improvement in that way. And it's really hard to jump rungs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The two roles that we haven't really spoken about are the movement wings. So think about your like JJ Redick types, your Joe Harris types, the guys running off the screen, Steph Curry a lot of the time, although his overall role isn't defined that way.
Is Klay Thompson defined as a movement wing? I think so. Yep.
He is. I'm not sure.
Okay. He is.
There we go. The movement wings are only really fed by the spot up wings and the secondary creators, which I think makes sense. You start in one of those areas, or maybe you just start off as a movement wing, but you're not really going to see a glue guy all of a sudden turn into JJ Redick, or somebody who you have as a primary creator using a ton of pick and roll suddenly turn into a movement wing. So that's interesting. And the movement wings don't generally go anywhere once they're there. And if they do, they generally turn back into spot up wings, which I think makes sense. It's a similar skill set, just less of that running around screens. And then tall spot up wings, they are pretty much in between the glue guys with movement in both directions and then the spot up wings with movement in both directions. So they're a pretty rudimentary building block position that goes one of those two directions. So it's not, we don't have three perfect up and down ladders for guards, wings, and bigs, but I think we have a pretty intuitive network of positions that flow in ways that make sense from a scale or scope standpoint, and then from a positional spectrum standpoint. And I'm pretty pleased with what we have.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think very one fun thing that'll be interesting and something we can do now really quick is, you know, talk about the players we think might be able to change roles this upcoming season based off the data we're seeing. So, for example, glue guys are the most likely to change out of any of them because, as we've been talking about, it's such a kind of in-between, do-everything type of role. So one of the places they go to 9% of the time is they go from glue guys to tall creators. And of players who become tall creators, 55% of them come from glue guys. So I think it would be interesting just to, you know, see who was a glue guy in the 2018-19 season and we think would be good candidates to become tall creators this upcoming season.
For sure. And yeah, in our prep ahead here, I don't think we looked at the – we didn't use the numbers that we calculated last week. So there may be a more precise way to do
great
this.
Great job, everybody.
We can work through some of just from our points of view, having watched right basketball and certainly having gone through these grades plenty of times, of everybody, who do we think might be a good fit. So one example I will recommend or suggest – would be someone like Pascal Siakam. Was a glue guy last year. I think he has a great chance probably this year, maybe 2 years from now, but I think this year he is I'd put him as my top candidate to go from glue guy to tall creator, would mean for him taking on more pick and roll and more ISO and less of those big man type responsibilities.
What makes him such a good candidate over the guy we're going to talk about after him is also that like his team is so different that he's going to be asked to do more of the pick and roll ball handling in isolation than he was last year. Whereas, nice. So we thought of some candidates before this. The other guy we have as a potential one is Aaron Gordon on the Magic, where every year he does a little bit more and gets a little bit better. And I don't see a reason why that can't continue. He's only 23, but he is surrounded by a very similar roster to last year. So, that, you know, there's a chance that he just doesn't really change his play style in offense, and then he would remain a glue guy.
Yep. Whereas Siakam is, one, he's prepared from a skill set standpoint, but two, he's probably going to be fast-tracked there this year because of the difference in the roster makeup.
Yep.
So those are two guys we think could make it. A couple examples of other glue guys who we perhaps don't think would end up making it to Tall Creators, and they can certainly end up being other roles. But like, so Kyle Kuzma, at least not anytime soon, or not with their roster makeup, he's not going to turn into a Tall Creator.
I feel bad for Kuzma. We spend all these podcasts typing up Danny Green and Brooke Lopez, and every other show I just dump on Kuzma somehow.
He's the face of Puma now. I think he's doing okay.
He's doing okay. He's like the first player I check for some reason when you ask me to like see how a player fits some tool you made. I'm like, oh, Tony Kuzma, yeah.
Sensing the hate. I think eventually he has a chance. Next year he doesn't have a chance.
No chance.
No. Yeah. Eventually. I like Kuzma. I think he's a good player, but yeah, no way that's happening.
If his shot comes back.
He's then they're going to make him a spot-up shooter, movement wing or something. But
yeah.
Ideally, he's like your bench creator, and then he maybe stays as a glue guy. But
maybe.
I think he may end up being one of the higher-end glue guys. That's not a glue guy because right. We're just not sure what he should do, but he's a glue guy because in this perfect world, he can shoot, and he's a good roll man, and he's a good finisher, and he can dribble a little bit. So it's just – doing a little bit of everything in a good way.
Yes.
He's an L. Either of you want to suggest a different guy?
Yeah, some of these are kind of obvious, right? Like with glue guys in general, you just can kind of be like, yes, this guy will never be a creator. But like Buddy Hield is a guy who could. You know, we've seen him do stuff off the dribble, but we don't think that he will. Both given A, that Fox is now their guy. You know, they have Bogdanovich on that team too. And B, it makes more sense to have Buddy given his skill set maybe drift a little bit more towards a shooting role or a wing role.
And I talked about, I think last week by myself, maybe 2 weeks ago, about him going from glue guy.
Which, I think it was two weeks ago.
I don't know how that happened. I don't know how you have him with his skill set be a glue guy. But he should be a movement wing. And if he were to be a movement wing, he would be one of the first players to go from glue guy to movement wing. Boom. With the others being Etuan Moore, Troy Daniels, and Damian Lee. But
I love that you spelled Damian wrong.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to say anything.
Welp.
he's not a very traveled player in the league, so it makes sense that you would not know Indeed. Much about him. The other one that we have on here that we wanted to discuss is from primary creator to mega creator. Both because it's an interesting one, because I think it's just like the biggest jump. And B, because when you're a mega creator, all of a sudden you're basically a superstar on offense, right?
It's the top of the ladder.
Yeah.
I mean, based off the way these are defined, the difference essentially is you just add on more isolation possessions. Right. So
that tends to mean you can create at the absolute apex for yourself. Like, you're right. Really good at it.
Right. Like, the almost over 50% of what you're doing is creating for yourself or teammates. And a lot of that is in an isolation sense.
Yep.
Yeah. The first guy we have on here, I think, is the most obvious guy, and that's Luka Doncic. Because the Mavs just have, well, beyond that, he's amazing at basketball at such a young age, and he will grow in his second year just as a person and player. The Mavs have no one else to handle the ball, and he's just going to do everything. And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
and if anything, I see him more as a natural fit as a mega creator already than as a primary creator, purely from the play type standpoint. I would have thought he'd be using more or a lot more ISO than he were using pick and roll possessions. So I see that as almost like that's an easy one. That one is going to happen, because it's not that he needs to get a lot better for him to fit there. I think just right now he's probably a better or his tendencies are more toward that ISO ball than running a pick and roll.
Right. I agree. See, that's how I feel about another guy that you guys didn't have as much faith in this jump, and that's Trae Young. Because he can pull up from 30, no problem. And after the All-Star break, when he was substantially more effective, he was more pass happy as a player. So perhaps the Hawks don't push him to be that kind of guy. But I think when you have a guy who not as well as Steph, but can do the Steph like thing of I can create a decent look from anywhere when I cross half court. It's you have that guy ISO sometimes.
Right. Yeah. My main hesitation with putting Trey in this group wasn't that I don't think he's like that caliber of offensive player. It's that
he I heard you loud and clear.
Yeah, like he's a pick and roll he's a pick and roll focused guy. You know, he's really good at that, and
he
and
is.
Necessarily it might not necessarily make sense to divert possessions away from something he's really good at for something else necessarily, at least not in the next year or two.
So yeah. Jacob is saying he can't cut it. I gotta go. I have to go tweet something, guys. I'll be right back.
Oh, I love it. Two other guys we have as potential guys here. One is Devin Booker, which again, of course, yep.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's bound to happen eventually anyway. Yeah. More shots.
100%.
Rubio's not really going to do anything special in that role. The other guy we have on here, and this is the guy that I'm surprised we put on here, is CJ McCollum, just because I don't think he's going to ISO very often with Dame as his teammate. But understood, I understand the notion of having him here because he does have the skill set to be a guy who makes that transition.
Oh, no, I disagree with this one. Tony, weren't you the one that wanted us to?
I'm the one who put it on. That was
all right. Jacob, how do you – so – I think CJ McCollum could, from a skill set standpoint, I think he certainly could. I just don't think with the roster they have, with the scheme they run, he's going to drop enough in pick and roll and raise enough in ISO to make it to this.
Well, I don't know his percents off the top of my head, but I mean, I could see it happening with, you know, it's a very different team this year. They have to utilize him a little bit differently, and that's enough to push him over the scale to this more ISO-heavy creator rather than pick-and-roll creator. But you're right that, I wouldn't bet money on it. I just don't think it's an unrealistic example.
I think a lot of his creation, and this could be wrong, I'd have to pull the numbers up, but my take on the creation that he's having in the shots that he's getting that are, you know, those tough mid-range shots that he's knocking down, those are coming from already having – that little bit of an edge from him coming off of either an on or off ball screen where he's got you on his hip and then he makes his move more so than you're set, you're standing in front of him and he beats you.
Show me the data.
I got to prove me wrong.
Well, I can do a more anecdotal point that we don't have a stat for. I think one of CJ McCollum's best skills is being Damian Lillard's teammate. Like, they fit really well together.
They do.
As a pair of guards. And I don't see any reason they're going to be like, you know what? We're going to increase your role this year. Even though ESPN thinks he's the 13th best player in the
year. I'm pretty sure CJ McCollum's best skill is securing the bag because he has made so much money relative. I mean, he's a really good player, but he has made so much money.
13th. Like,
I don't know. I'm as biased as it comes.
I was joking in a chat with Jacob, like obviously this is a little facetious, but like you could name 13 players with a decent argument in his division that he's like as good as. It's like how did ESPN put this guy as the 13th best player in the league? Is beyond me.
All right, I found the numbers. Well, I agree with you.
That's okay. We already moved on. So we already moved on. Tim. No.
11%. 11% of his half court types were in ISO.
Well, he just needs to bump that to over 15% and we're cooking.
That's not true.
That is true.
Is that the number?
Yeah.
No, it's
in the chart 15, you 15. Shared with us.
Yeah, it's 15. All right, he's close.
I rest my case.
And the chart that I am looking at.
He'd have to raise his ISO possessions by about, 50% more than what he's doing right now.
33%.
Am right. I the glue guy of the podcast, or I have to come in and make this stuff?
Please break up this fight.
Take us to an ad roll.
Let's do our no guys. These are obvious ones. Our no guys, the guys we don't think have any shot of going from primary creator to mega creator. Do we need to go over that like we did with Kuzma?
So, Jordan Clarkson, baby.
Yeah, he's the one I wanted to bring up.
I'd love to see it just to. That's to watch the world burn.
The Cavs are going for Cole Anthony, and they are going to let Jordan Clarkson screw over their young point guards and score every possession.
Yeah, so that's not happening. And that then a couple of the guys, examples of primary creators who we don't think will make that jump. Corey Joseph, he's going to continue being more of a pick and roll than an ISO guy, and then Drew Holiday as well.
So yeah, that, I think Drew's an interesting one too, because with his team being so new, there's just no way they're going to be like, yo, Drew, go ISO, you know.
Or potentially they will, just because, I don't know, maybe they don't have all their sets in with all the roster turnover. You never know. But so I guess that can bookend our discussion on roles and the role ladders. Well, I'll try to draw this up and then tweet it out. Hopefully we can get some good data viz on it. Mm-hmm. And probably have a tweet thread out sometime soon. But this has been fun.
Yeah, but we're not done. We have a short amount of time left, and there was some big, big WNBA news that we want to talk about. So let's take a quick break and talk about it.
Now let's talk about Indochino. Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe. I know that I wear suits every day at work, and when you have a suit that fits well, you feel great. And with Indochino and how affordable they are, you can get almost all of their custom clothing for under $400. So instead of just going and buying one expensive suit, you can go buy, you know, two or three or four and fill out your wardrobe. And if you do decide to do that, start your style upgrade now with $30 off of your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Blue Wire at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. So go to Indochino.com, promo code Blue Wire, for $30 off that total purchase of $399 or more. It's an incredible deal and allows you to get some great custom clothing made to measure just for you. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit. So go to Indochino.com and use the promo code BlueWire. When you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. It's time consuming, it's expensive, there's so many options to choose from, and just how do you know that you're making the right choice? That's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keep your customers happy. No matter where you're selling, whether it's Amazon, Etsy, or your own website, ShipStation brings all of your orders into one simple interface, making them really easy to manage from any device, even your cell phone. ShipStation works with any of the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, and even Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solutions for you and your customer. They even offer big discounts on shipping costs. Now, any business can access the same postage discounts that are usually reserved for large Fortune 500 companies. You always know that you're getting the best deal. It's no wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll sell more in less time and with the best rates available. So right now, B-Ball Index podcast listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use offer code BLUE. There's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without even giving them your credit card info. So just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone on the top of the homepage, and type in the word BLUE. That's ShipStation.com and enter offer code BLUE. ShipStation.com. Make ship happen.
It's the playoffs. And Jacob was spot on. If you heard our WNBA playoff preview a few weeks ago, looking at a Mystic Sun final, we are now here, and things were going relatively well for the Mystics after one game. And then the big news, Della Don has a herniated disc in her back. Jacob, how does this affect the finals? Where are we right now?
Well, it's hard to say. So right now she's going to be reevaluated Saturday. Game three is Sunday. It's tied 1-1. Game one, pretty straightforward, relatively speaking, went as expected with the Mystics taking the win by 9 points. Della Don played great. The bench played pretty well. And, you know, they just had a really good game. Game two, Della Don goes out early. And Connecticut has a wild outlier rebounding game. They rebounded 45% of available offensive rebounds, which is just like a ludicrous number. I mean, they were at a bit under 30% after game one. So it's a 50% increase. It's a considerable difference. And because of that, coupled with Della Don being out, they were able to pull off the win by 12. And the series is tied 1-1, kind of just waiting to find out what happens to Della Don this Saturday. So I did some quick simulations. I simulated the rest of the series 10,000 times, depending on how many games Della Don would be out. So if she misses zero games or if she misses the rest of it. The good news for Mystics fans is even if she misses the entire rest of the finals, my model had her winning in just over 70% of simulations. So, you know, I wouldn't worry too much. Even if she misses everything, the Mystics are still overall the best team in the league, and they were dominant this year. And if she misses zero games and is fully herself, my model gave them just over an 85% chance to win the finals. So Mystics still in a good spot, even if Deladon isn't able to go the rest of the finals or isn't quite herself. They should be able to pull it out as long as they get back to themselves in the next couple of games.
They're going to have to clean up the rebounding.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave up 17 offensive rebounds in the second game. Alyssa Thomas and Jonquel Jones had 15 of them on their own. The Mystics had 27 rebounds as a team. Like that deficit's got to be closer, especially, you know, when you need more shots without your MVP candidate if she happens to not be playing.
Right. One thing that, and I'm sure this is certainly baked into the PIPM simulations, but one thing that's interesting from game one to game two was that in both games, the Mystics had quite an edge when it comes to shot quality. In terms of the types of looks they were getting, in game one they had quite a substantial edge, and then in game two they held that edge, just got killed on the boards. But if they can clean up the rebounding and continue to generate high quality shots, even without Elaine Deladon, they have the talent on that roster to, if they can shoot close to expectation on those looks, be in a really really good shot, good spot to win the series.
For sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see. Can't wait for the news on set. But can't wait is the wrong word. But eager to find out the news on Saturday about Deladon's status, because quite a large factor. And two straight injuries for her in postseason runs is just brutal.
Yeah.
WNBA has just had some brutal injury luck to stars this entire season.
Yeah.
For sure. And for Deladon specifically, she's 0-2 in finals. She's been swept twice. So this would be such a rough way for her to go out and not win. And even if they do win, her
not being able to contribute.
Yeah, not being able to contribute probably feels different. You want to be out there winning. But yeah, that'll be something to watch. If she is announced out for the rest of the series, I'd keep an eye on those gambling lines. Because if we're thinking the Mystics still have about a 70% chance of winning the series, and whatever the gamblers think is perhaps substantially different, there may be an opportunity there.
Absolutely. That's a good advice.
I've got nothing on gambling here. Anybody else got a thought on the WNBA Finals? Where I stand?
I haven't been able to watch either of the game. Well, no, I watched the first game. I wasn't able to watch game two. But I'll be paying attention to see if the Mystics can maintain generating good shots. I think something in their favor that helps is they run a very good offense schematically. So they're in a pretty good position to overcome not having that stud to just take over the game. I will be interested to see, we should probably be calculating the offensive role data for the WNBA, just like we have for the NBA. And I'd love to break that down in a little bit, perhaps next week. So...
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to do this again next week. But thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of the B-Ball Index podcast. We'll be back next week with preseason games to talk about. So we'll see you then, and have a great week.